invite you to get your Bible out and open it up. We're going to see what the Bible has to say about the subject of gambling. I was asked a question about gambling this past week. Took just a moment to talk with the individual about it, but got to thinking about it further and decided it'd be something that would be worth us spending our time talking about this morning. Gambling, as we know, is a very prominent part of our culture today. It is estimated that two-thirds of the adult population is involved in some kind of gambling activity every year, with billions of dollars being involved. What was at one time reserved for late-night back rooms can be enjoyed in legalized casinos in several states, on riverboats, in Indian reservations, on racetracks, offshore betting, and online gambling. We can go to the convenience store on the corner of the street and buy our lotto ticket. We can take part in office pools. We can even engage in church-sponsored gambling activities. It is so accessible. It is so prevalent. And the devices that are used and the arguments that are used to justify it, to condone it, to even recommend it, make it especially challenging for some today who are striving to rise above the course of this world and to do what is right and what is pure in the eyes of God. We need to consider what the Bible has to say about gambling. What makes this a little interesting and requires a little more effort on our part is the fact that you can't find the word gamble or gambling in the Bible. There is no verse that we can go to that says, "Thou shalt not gamble." But that doesn't give us the green light to go ahead and take part in this activity. We know that the Bible is not a list of thou shalts and thou shalt nots. If it was, could you imagine how long it would be? God doesn't guide us and direct us entirely in that way. Instead, what God does in His Word is He establishes principles of righteousness and holiness. And so what we need to do with the subject of gambling, as with many other subjects that we are faced with in our world today, we need to see what the Bible has to say about that particular activity or that particular subject, and especially some principles that are set forth in the Word of God that apply to the subject. And that's what we'll do. First, we need to identify just exactly what gambling is. A gamble is not simply taking a chance or a risk. Sometimes someone will say, well, all of life is a gamble, as if to justify partaking in this activity. Gambling, rather, is the placing of a wager or a bet on the outcome of a game or an event of chance. Gambling is, by definition, the betting or staking of something of value with the consciousness of risk and hope of gain on the outcome of a game, a contest, or an uncertain event. That's what we mean by gambling. We're not talking about playing cards or shooting pool. We're not talking about going to a football game or even watching a horse race. We're talking about a wager or a bet that is placed upon an uncertain event with the hopes that we win, that we profit from that we get something from that. That's what we mean by gambling. What is wrong with gambling? Well, the principle of gambling is wrong, and there are several things that are wrong with the principle of gambling. Number one, gambling violates the authorized means of gaining wealth. You realize that the Bible tells us just how it is that we are to make our money, or how it is that we are to come into possession of material wealth. Gambling is not one of the authorized means of us having wealth or gaining property or money. The first is work, just good old-fashioned work. The Bible holds this up as an authorized means of gaining wealth, the preferred means of gaining wealth. Jesus Himself said in Luke chapter 10 and at verse 7 that the laborer is worthy of his wages. And so Jesus established that principle. If you work, If you go into work and you clock in, or you show up to do work for pay, you earn that work. That time that you spend working, you earn your wages. In Ephesians at chapter 4 and verse 28, the Apostle Paul says, "Let him who stole steal no longer, but rather let him labor, working with his hands what is good, that he may have something to give to him who has need." You don't steal, and that's what gambling is, it's stealing. We're going to look at that in just a moment. You don't steal, but rather you work. And in 2 Thessalonians chapter 3 and verse 10, what do we find there? If a man will not work, neither shall he eat. That passage allows me to drive by many an individual standing up holding a cardboard sign. If you won't work, neither should you eat. We gain our possessions by just good old-fashioned work. Also, we can gain wealth through commerce, that is, through selling something of value to ourselves. In Matthew chapter 13 and verse 44, in giving the series of parables that have to do with the kingdom of God, in Matthew chapter 13 and verse 44, Jesus said, again, "The kingdom of heaven is like a treasure hidden in a field, which a man found and hid, and for joy over it goes and sells all that he has and buys that field." How did that man come to possess that field in which he discovered a treasure? Well, he went, and to put it in today's terms, he liquidated his assets. He went and he sold everything that he had that was of any value to him, and with that money he went and he bought that field. That was a legitimate way for him to gain that money or for him to gain that wealth. We see the early Christians involved in this practice in Acts chapter 4. It didn't take long for Christians to come to be in want. You remember that when the gospel was first preached, Jerusalem was filled with devout Jews from all over heaven. And instead of returning home after Pentecost, they stayed there as Christians to learn from the apostles. And pretty soon their traveling money ran out. And Christians came to be in need, but other Christians came to their help, came to their aid. In Acts chapter 4, starting at verse 34, we read, "Nor was there anyone among them who lacked, for all who were possessors of lands or houses sold them and brought the proceeds of the things that were sold and laid them at the apostles' feet, and they distributed to each as anyone had need." And then we read about a man named Barnabas who's introduced to us here in this context of being so generous. He sells his land, he sells his property, liquidates those assets and takes that money, gives it to the apostles to take care of those who were in need. That's a legitimate way for you and I to gain money, is to sell things that we own that are of value. Another way we can come to possess wealth or money is through a gift. We read Ephesians chapter 4, verse 28, which says that we shouldn't steal, but rather we should work with our hands, laboring with what is good. Do you remember the end result? That we may give to him who has need. We can give, and we can receive. And so receiving a gift is a way, a legitimate way of obtaining wealth, obtaining money. You remember in Matthew chapter 2 and at verse 11, after Jesus was born, the wise men came bearing gifts that they gave to the parents of the Lord. Those gifts were very valuable. And that was a legitimate way for them to get the substance that they would need as they escaped to Egypt. Remember, to hide the Lord from Herod during that time in his youth, in his infancy. That was money that they needed. They got it from God through a gift that was given to them. And of course, we can receive wealth, the scriptures teach, through an inheritance. And the law of Moses, Numbers chapter 27, verses 1 through 11, deal with laws concerning the inheritance and giving an inheritance. In Luke chapter 15 and verse 12, in the parable of the prodigal son, remember the youngest came to his father and said, "Father, I want the portion of goods that belongs to me." Instead of waiting for his father to die and get them, he in essence told his father, "I wish you were dead. I want what's coming to me now." And we know that he did just that, and he gave that portion of the wealth to his son. Although his son, the prodigal son, had a very sinful attitude, what the father did was something that certainly is in accordance with scriptures. He gave him his inheritance. Now that's what the Bible teaches about how you and I are to come to have money. And the Scriptures don't say anything about us placing a wager or a bet on the outcome of an uncertain event. Rather, we are to work honest work. Or we are to engage in commerce. We are to receive gifts. Or we are to receive an inheritance. Gambling does not qualify as any of these things. Also, the problem with gambling is that it violates the principle of stewardship. Turn to 1 Peter chapter 4. 1 Peter chapter 4, I want us to look at verse 10. 1 Peter chapter 4, and at verse 10. The Scriptures teach that all Christians are stewards. 1 Peter 4, and at verse 10. As each one has received a gift, minister it to one another as good stewards of the manifold grace of God. Every Christian is a steward of God's blessings. Now, we don't talk about stewardship very often or very much. So we need to understand what that is. A steward is simply a manager over someone else's property. A steward is a manager, one who manages, one who takes care of the property that belongs to someone else, with the idea that they're going to be held accountable for how they manage it, or how they oversee it, or how they take care of it. We are stewards of the things that God has given unto us. That means that nothing that we own really is ours. The Scriptures teach that everything ultimately belongs to God. In the 24th Psalm, in Psalms 24 and at verse 1, Psalms 24 and verse 1 says, "The earth is the Lord's, and all its fullness, the world and those who dwell therein." If we have a steward's mind, if we as Christians live with the mind of a steward, we're going to understand that those things that we possess and that figure that we have on the bottom line in our checkbook, that doesn't represent our possessions. That represents God's possessions that we are given authority over, or that we are to manage, that we are accountable for. In short, the money that we would take to Vegas and blow at the casino doesn't belong to us. Who does it belong to? It belongs to God. The money that we would take and go blow on scratch and win tickets, the money that we would take and buy a square in the office pool at work, the money that we would take and spend with any kind or any form of gambling, that's not our money. It belongs to the Lord. And as stewards, we need to use it, we need to spend it in the way that the owner wants it spent, and that the owner wants it used. And as we'll develop through this study, you'll see that gambling is such a thing, God would not want us to participate in it or to support it with His money that we're accountable for. Now, there is a sense in which what we have is ours. I understand in Acts chapter 5, we read at the end of chapter 4 where the Christians were selling their property and they were bringing the money and giving it to, laying it at the apostles' feet. And here in chapter 5 we are introduced to Ananias and Sapphira who do that. They sell their property, but they keep back a portion of it for themselves. They keep that in their pocket and they come and they act like they're giving everything. That they want credit for making a full sacrifice when in fact they're just making a partial sacrifice and they're lying. They're lying to the church, they're lying to the apostles, and they're lying to God. And Peter, in confronting Ananias, says in verse 4, "While it remained," that is that money that you got from the sale of that property, "while it remained, was it not your own? And after it was sold, was it not in your own control? Why have you conceived this thing in your heart? You've not lied to men, but to God." I understand and recognize that, in a sense, the things that we have are ours. They are ours, and that we are responsible for using them the way that we choose to use them. But as stewards of God, we must be governed by principles set forth in His Word regarding how we spend our money. And gambling is of such a nature that God would have no part with it, no part of it. Gambling, God does not allow us to squander our possessions through gambling. Third, gambling violates the principle of brotherly love. We just sang about loving one another. You can't do that if you're real serious about your gambling. Because you know what has to happen in order for you to win the jackpot? Everybody else has got to lose. Gambling is an activity in which there's only one winner, and everybody else is a loser. I win because you lose. And in order for me to win, you have got to lose. Gambling, in essence, is a form of stealing. We're all going to put our money there in the pot, but I plan on taking it. And just because you have willingly surrendered it doesn't make it any less stealing when I take it. Gambling is a form of stealing. Also, gambling is a form of selfishness. I'm going to win that pot. All those chips you've got in front of you, I want those at the end of the night. And I don't care what that does to you. And I don't care what it does to your marriage. And I don't care what your children have to go without. I want that. It's a form of stealing. It's a form of selfishness. And it's a lack of love and basic concern for our fellow man. Just the opposite of what Jesus taught in Matthew at chapter 22 and in verse 39. What's the greatest commandment? Well, to love God. But the second greatest is like unto it. You love your neighbor as yourself. In Matthew at chapter 7 and at verse 12, Jesus gave what we often refer to as the golden rule. Perhaps it's better referred to as the royal law. Matthew at chapter 7 and at verse 12, therefore, whatever you want men to do to you, do also to them. For this is the law and the prophets. I don't want you coming and taking what is mine. And so I'm not going to try to come and take what is yours. Remember, as Paul wrote in Romans chapter 13 and at verse 10, love does no harm to one's fellow man. Love does no harm, but gambling certainly does. So gambling is wrong. It's wrong for the Christian to be involved in gambling. Not because we can find a verse that says, thou shalt not gamble, but because of principles that are set forth. Principles that have to do with love. Principles that have to do with how we treat one another. Principles that have to do with the proper way for us to accumulate and come to obtain our money. Gambling violates these principles. Also, we need to understand that gambling is wrong because of the motivation that is behind it. Why do people go to the casinos? Why do people buy the lottery tickets? Why are people involved in gambling? Is it because of the competition? Well, some might think so. Is it because of the entertainment? That's what some people might say. To themselves. That's the way I've heard a lot of people justify it. I go to the casino. When we lived in Texas, there weren't any casinos in Texas, but in Louisiana, there were tons of them. As soon as you hit the border, and you couldn't help but trip over a casino in Louisiana. I tell you, Louisiana ain't hurting for money. They're getting plenty of money through those casinos all up and down the coast there. And a lot of people would go from Edna and take a bus over and spend the night gambling in the casino. That's what they do on Friday or Saturday night. And they'd say, that's my entertainment. And I set aside that money for entertainment. If I win, I win. If I lose, it doesn't matter. That's my entertainment. Well, I think there's a little bit more to it than just good old entertainment. Some try to justify it by entertainment. Some justify it by helping out causes. I mean, how long have we been sold the bill of goods that the lottery goes to help our schools? Mark, you want to talk about that sometime? If that's the case, our children going to public schools ought to be the best and the brightest the world has ever seen. Now, something's not connecting there. I'm not buying that. I never did, and I'm certainly not buying it today. So no, helping causes, that didn't. What's the motivation behind gambling? Why do people gamble? Well, number one is because of greed. Right? Number one is because of greed. Why is it? Hardly anybody buys lottery tickets when the lotto jackpot amount is $200,000 or $300,000. But they're standing in line to buy tickets when it's about $250 million. It's greed. That's the whole motivating factor behind gambling. Look what I can get. Look what I can win. Win the big jackpot, the big payoff, the loosest slots in town. We see these kind of advertisements on the billboards for the casinos. For many people, the appeal of gambling is to hit it big and to become rich. And the Bible warns about the desire to be rich. The very thing that motivates gambling is something the Bible warns very strictly against. 1 Timothy chapter 6, verses 9 and 10. But those who desire to be rich and fall in, those who desire to be rich fall into temptation and a snare, and into many foolish and harmful lusts which drown men in destruction and perdition. For the love of money is a root of all kinds of evil, for which some have strayed from the faith in their greediness and pierced themselves through with many sorrows. Money is not evil. Money is neutral. It's the motivation. It's the attitude of the person that has it or wants it. The love of money is the root of evil. And what drives the gambling industry is greed. The desire to win the jackpot. The desire to win big. The love of money and the desire to become rich can entice a Christian to become involved in and to be carried away by the sin of gambling. You know the problem with greed? The Scriptures tell us in the book of Ecclesiastes at chapter 5, the problem with greed is that it is a monster which can never be tamed. It is an appetite or a desire which can never be satisfied. I don't care how big the jackpot is that you win, it will not satisfy greed. It will not satisfy your desire to have more. Look at Ecclesiastes at chapter 5, verses 10 through 12. Solomon says, "He who loves silver will not be satisfied with silver, nor he who loves abundance with increase. This also is vanity. When goods increase, they increase who eat them. So what profit have the owners except to see them with their eyes? The sleep of a laboring man is sweet, whether he has little or much, but the abundance of the rich will not permit him to sleep." I know most of us are in a position where we kind of laugh at the problems of the rich. Oh, I'd love to have those problems, tripping over my bars of gold, having to count all my money all the time. Do you know the Scriptures say very plainly that those who are wealthy have their problems. They have their challenges. So to win the big jackpot, you're simply trading in one set of problems for another. Haven't you seen those shows? What the lottery did to my life? What winning the lottery did to me? A lot of them end up worse than they were when they began. Greed is a monster that can never be satisfied with this world's goods. And another problem with gambling, another motivation behind it, is covetousness. Covetousness simply means you want what you see. It means you want more. Must have. That's the idea behind covetousness. Again, it's a monster that is never satisfied. It's an appetite that is never filled. In Luke chapter 12 and at verse 15, Jesus was teaching one time and someone in the crowd cried out and interrupted him and asked him to tell his brother to share the inheritance with him. The Lord didn't appreciate this one bit. He addressed the man who interrupted him with one verse. And then in verse 15 it says, "Then he said to them, take heed and beware of covetousness, for one's life does not consist in the abundance of the things he possesses." That's not what life is about. Life is not about the bottom line that you have in your checkbook. It's not about all the treasures that you've got stored up in your house or out in your parking, your driveway, or out in some other property. Life, the purpose of life, happiness, can't be bought at the convenience store. And it can't be found on a weekend trip to Vegas. Jesus says, beware of covetousness. Don't let it fool you That's not what life is really all about. But that's not the campaign, or that's not what we hear from the ad campaigns from the gambling industry. Well, this is the place for excitement. This is where it all is. This is what it's all about. And you go one time, and you get hooked. Maybe you pull the lever, and you win a small jackpot, and they've got you. And you spend the rest of your life trying to get that thrill back. Trying to regain, trying to relive that experience again. The Bible warns against covetousness. It is a sin of this world that we are to put off and we are to walk away from. Ephesians chapter 5, verses 3 through 7. But fornication and all uncleanness or covetousness, let it not even be named among you as is fitting for saints. Neither filthiness, nor foolish talking, nor coarse jesting, which are not fitting, but rather giving of thanks. For this you know that no fornicator, unclean person, or covetous man who is an idolater has any inheritance in the kingdom of Christ and God. A covetous man is an idolater. Covetousness is idolatry because it causes that which we want to take the place of God in our hearts. It's no longer about me serving God and being the best Christian I can be. It's about me winning the next jackpot. It's about me planning that next trip so I can go and I can gamble and I can recapture that excitement. That becomes idolatry to us. That's the motivation behind gambling. That's why people go to the casinos. They don't go for the cheap buffet. And they don't go to see the washed-up entertainers who can't perform anywhere else than in casinos. They go for the excitement of winning the lottery or winning the jackpot or winning the big prize. The motivation behind gambling is sinful, the types of sins that the Bible tells us to get away from. And finally, why is it that God wouldn't want us to take this money and give it to an activity like gambling? Well, we need to look at the fruit of gambling. We need to see just what gambling produces. For one thing, gambling, for a lot of people, is addictive. That buzz, that excitement is something that they get addicted to in much the same way that drugs and alcohol get a hold on people. Pornography gets a hold on people. That rush and that excitement, it takes them. I don't know if you've ever seen a lottery ticket or one of those scratch-off tickets. I've never bought one. I've never received one as a gift. But I've picked them up out of the parking lots from time to time to help get the trash off. You turn over and you look on the back of those things. Every one of them that I've seen, it gives you an 800 number where you can call Gamblers Anonymous. If you've got a problem. If buying their product and using their service has caused you to become addicted, they're going to give you some help. They're going to tell you where you can find it. Gambling is addictive to many people, and even the industry itself admits this. The Scriptures teach that we are not to allow anything to have power over us, whether it be alcohol, or nicotine, or drugs, or the excitement of gambling. We are not to allow anything to have that hold over us. It's estimated that there are some 15 million people in the United States today who display signs of gambling addiction. It is addictive. Secondly, it destroys lives. The problem gambler, they lose more than just their wager. They lose more than just the money that they take to Vegas or that they take with them to go into the back room to play poker with their buddies. The average debt incurred by a male pathological gambler in the United States is between $55,000 and $90,000. The female gambler, it's $15,000. Think about that. A debt anywhere from $15,000 to $90,000. How'd you like to have that weight hung around your neck? That's what gambling has done to some people, has done to their lives. 65% of problem gamblers commit crimes to support their gambling addiction. The average divorce rate for problem gamblers is nearly double that of non-gamblers. And the suicide rate for problem gamblers is 20 times higher than for non-gamblers. What that means is that statistically, one in every five problem gamblers attempt suicide sooner or later. And that's what gambling is. And that's what gambling has the potential to do to people. And that's why Christians ought not to have anything to do with it. There's also the problem of evil companions. In 1 Corinthians at chapter 15, 1 Corinthians chapter 15 and verse 33 says, "Do not be deceived. Evil company corrupts good habits." Well, who are you going to be with when you're gambling? You going to be with the elders? You going to be with gospel preachers? I hope not. Are you going to be with people who aren't so godly? We just saw the motivation behind gambling. It's greed. And it's covetousness. And if you go and gamble with those kind of people, you spend time with those kind of people, you're going to be influenced by those kind of people. And sooner or later, the first chance they get, you're going to be taken advantage of by those kind of people. Because remember, the only way they win is if you lose. They're not going to think anything in the world about taking money out of your children's mouth, out of your pension, out of your retirement, out of what you'd put in that plate, taking it away from you so that they can spend it on their own pleasures. The gambler associates himself with and is influenced by those who are motivated by greed and covetousness. Gambling is such that it contributes to crime and to other sins. What happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. Need I say more? Now I know, and I could almost hear Brother Keith objecting to a statement like that. And I know that there are good people that live in Las Vegas, Nevada. I know that there are good people that live across the river from the riverboat gambling places. I know that. I acknowledge that, and I think that you do as well. But which came to Vegas first? What is Vegas known for? Sin City. What got there first? The crime? The alcohol? The legalized prostitution? What got there first? What brought the rest? It was gambling, wasn't it? Gambling is what made Las Vegas what it is today. Papers reported that after casinos were opened in Atlantic City, New Jersey, the total number of crimes within a 30-mile radius increased 100%. Anywhere you build a casino, you're going to have crime. That's just what the statistics show. I'm originally from Oklahoma. Most of my family lives in Oklahoma. So we've been through and in Oklahoma quite a bit. And over the last 15 years or so, the Indian reservations there in Oklahoma, they're not held to the same standards that most of the residents are. They're allowed some freedoms. And they've built casinos. And just about everywhere that you've got Indian territory in Oklahoma, you've got a casino. One place, very close to where my grandmother lives, you can drive right by it and you can see it. You look over to the left, there's a casino over there, and right across the street from it is a prison. And that's just the way that's worked out, but I thought, how fitting. The two really go hand in hand. One begets the other. Gambling, one of the fruits of gambling, is crime and misery. And of course, gambling, like any other sin, will destroy the influence of a child of God. And I'm convinced that we need to be more concerned as individual Christians. We need to be more concerned about maintaining our influence for good in this world. Because as Jesus says in Matthew chapter 5 and verse 13, once the salt has lost its savor, it's not good for anything. Once you and I have lost our influence for good, once we've gotten involved in gambling and we've gotten caught up in that covetousness and we've lost our money and we've lost our house and we've lost our spouse, What kind of influence for good are we going to be? Our life is a shambles because we got involved in this activity of gambling. Knowing the things that motivate gambling, knowing the things that result from gambling, that ought to be enough to tell us as Christians we ought not to have anything to do with it. Some have tried to justify their involvement in gambling by arguing that we take a chance every day in different aspects and different areas of our lives. You get in a car and you drive somewhere, well, you're taking a chance, and I can't disagree with that. You cross the street somewhere, you're taking a chance. The farmer, when he plants a crop, he's taking a chance. The man who buys stocks and invests in a company, he's taking a chance. So see, there really isn't anything wrong with gambling. What I want you to remember is that gambling involves more than just a risk. Gambling is the placing of a wager on the outcome with the idea and with the hopes of taking what belongs to somebody else as your spoils, as your win. In farming, if the farmer has a good year, he hasn't stolen from his neighbors who are also farming. They, for the most part, they all have a good year, they all have a bad year together. With investing, if I profit, if I buy some stock and it goes up and I profit, that's not because the company went belly up, it's because the company did well. And when the company does well, then the investors do well. That's just the opposite of gambling. Just the opposite of the way gambling works. So don't be fooled, don't be suckered into that kind of an argument. Yes, there are some things in life that that involve chance. Gambling involves a wager with the hopes that we win because somebody else is lost. That's what gambling is. And that's why gambling is wrong. We need to remember that we are to flee sins like greed and covetousness. We are to work honest jobs to provide for ourselves and for others. And we need to remember that we are going to have to give an answer for the way that we have used our money and for the way that we have treated others. And let's think about that as we think about this subject of gambling. I thank you for your kind consideration and hope the study has helped you, has armed you with some scriptures and with some information that you need as you deal perhaps from time to time with the question of why you're not involved with this. Or maybe you're struggling with whether or not to be involved, or maybe you need to get out of this practice. And maybe this study this morning has helped you to realize this is a sin you need to repent of. You need to quit doing that. You need to quit being involved in that. I hope it's helped you in some way. If you're here and you're subject to the invitation, we're going to extend it at this time. Maybe you're ready to become a child of God. Listen, don't gamble on whether or not you're going to be okay with God. Don't gamble on God's indifference that He doesn't care, or God's goodness that He's just going to let you on into heaven because you're a good old boy. Don't take a chance with that. Your soul salvation can be a sure thing if you'll come to Jesus Christ in faith and you'll obey the gospel. You can be saved. And that's not a gamble. That's a sure thing. Maybe as a child of God you sinned and you need to make things right in a public way. Whatever your need is, we invite you to let it be known as together we stand and sing this song.